I'm John Allen Borick. I'm a retired United Methodist pastor. My wife and I came in June to volunteer at the Lutheran Church right after the pastor resigned. And the bishop appointed me to be there to do Sunday supply as well as the volunteer work, selling popcorn, that kind of thing. And so when the need was there, I volunteered to come back. And they provide a housing and a car. And so I'm officially the Sunday supply, although I do more than that. But that's why I'm here. Since been here since mid-October. And my wife, I went to Chicago for Thanksgiving and then brought her back in time for Sunday. And we'll be here to just before Christmas.
Wonderful. We're very happy to have you in Sitka.
Thank you.
So you are planning to host a talk that I think you do this talk regularly called Segregation to Selma, and it's about your life growing up in the Jim Crow South, meeting Martin Luther King Jr. Can you just tell us a little bit about that talk and how it came to be?
Yes. I was raised in, as I said, Jim Crow South, so it was segregated schools all through and when I came to Aurora, Illinois for college, my roommate was not my color. He happened to be from British Guiana, which is now Guyana. His ancestry was Indian, but I didn't know, so I asked him about that. So being in college and seeing a difference between black and white, I felt like I was less than my neighbors, my roommates, or my classmates from Maine and New England or California. They kept saying to me, you know, there's no difference. I said, I'm not colorblind. I see that. And intellectually, I think I began to see there is no difference. But that's not where my heart was. And so I just, those are feelings raised with that. All my life, I was taught to be a bigot in the schools, especially in Mississippi. I can point to specific instances. That's how we're indoctrinated. Now, this is not limited to the South. I know many things happening in what I call the North that are similar conversations. So it's not just that, just with me. So when I met King, it was a reluctant time. I was a theology student. I've been to church since I was a baby, practically. Thought I was a good person. And they invited me to go hear Martin Luther King in Chicago. So that's kind of how the story starts.
How long have you been doing this particular talk or speaking on this topic?
Yes, you know, I didn't pay much attention to it until my daughter needed a project to graduate from college, and she could interview a real person or write about a historic event. So she thought she would interview me and my story of meeting Martin Luther King. And so she put it together. And then I said, well, this is an interesting story. And so I began to share that. But the other thing that happened after meeting Dr. King was I began to work with civil rights movement in the late 60s and 70s. And I've done that for the last half century.
So you're giving this talk. It's 2024. Why is this important for people to hear now?
Yes. It's to realize that racism is alive and well. Some would call it the United States' original sin. It's infected us. I personally believe it was a factor, not the only, but a factor in the last presidential election. And it's rampant. And it's not that people are redneck bigots and are out with the Ku Klux Klan. No, it's subtle. It's more the attitudes that we've been raised with. I hear the phrase sometimes, there's not a racist bone in my body. And I would argue that, and experts, not myself, would say that if they're my age, people in their 70s and 80s especially, they really can't almost help it. I consider myself, for example, as a recovering racist. That's how I introduce myself, because it's so much a part of our lives. So I began to do the talk. I found out as a pastor, I would include it maybe in a sermon when appropriate. But I've changed it to be more for a secular audience, especially in schools, high schools, junior high schools, and in Rotary clubs. I'm a Rotarian, and I'm invited often to Rotary clubs to just tell the story of my meeting Martin Luther King and how my life was changed and also that of my dad.
That of your dad?
Yes. It's interesting to be able to go. I heard Martin Luther King, and I'll tell about that maybe on Saturday, a week from Saturday. But I came back, and that was a restless week because the demons of racism were wrestling with what I felt in my head and heart and what I heard Dr. King say. And King was asking people to come to Selma for the march. Now, this was the Bloody Sunday was the first Sunday of March. I heard Dr. King on the 3rd, and then on the last Sunday was to be the march. And Dr. King had asked Northern schools to send people, pastors, students, whatever, down there. To do that, the school required that I get permission from my parents. Well, my mother answered the phone and said, sure. And then she said, I'm glad your dad didn't answer the phone. So the following summer, I'd go home at Oklahoma, and we would have breakfast. And we wouldn't let go of each other, but we really disagreed. And finally, Mom would come by and said, look, I got to clear the table. Lunch is ready. And that went on for several summers until about a year before he died, he said to me, John Allen, I'm glad you represented our family at Selma. People can change. It is possible. It is not easy. It requires some study, introspection. And I think more importantly is meeting people who are different, people of color. And I see that, I see the relationship, for example, here in Sitka. Native people are highly respected for their ingenuity, their heritage, their knowledge of the area, their being at one with the nature, with fishing and with the land. And I'm really impressed with that degree. I'm hoping it will slowly happen in the South.
Sitka is pretty far from the Deep South.
Yes.
What do you hope people here will take away from your talk?
I hope it would encourage people to do some reading, to see how history was not taught as well as, and see the contributions of people of color. We give lip service, many of us, but that's not how we deeply feel. And part of it is that we don't have to think about it. People of color think about it, and I'm sure that's true with Native people here every day. We only have to think about it occasionally when we are with people or we something on the news tells us. Yeah, I guess I've been on a crusade, but it changed my life radically. And I've enjoyed the fight, and it's not over.
It sounds like you're, in part, asking people to interrogate themselves for, you know, if they're saying, oh, I don't have a racist bone in my body. You're saying that's not enough. You need to think harder.
I think people need to reflect and examine their feelings. For example, I've talked to people in Illinois, and they say there's not many people. There's only like the town where I worship. They say it's only about 3% African American, and I said, well, how many people in the stores? I don't see any. When I ask the question, they say, oh, there's a lot more than I thought. People of color will say they feel like they're invisible, and that's because we don't need them. We you know what's the value? That's our subconscious attitude, in my opinion. I can't tell people if they're racist. I'm not a judge. All I can say is my story. And you think about yourself. Think about your heart. Think about the fact that we are all God's children, regardless of our political party or our color of our skin.
Tell me about this event you're talking next Saturday.
Yes, I came with the idea that maybe I could, in fact, I brought some letters of recommendation from a school principal that I do every year at their school, that I could go to the schools. But that gets pretty hard when it's not on the agenda, it's not in the season. I've often gone, for example, to in Black History Month to a school. So I went to the library and said, you know, I have this program. I've got a PowerPoint. It's very basic, not very sophisticated, but it tells a story. Mm-hmm. And Margot was willing to say, yes, well, I think we can schedule it on a Saturday. And so I'm hoping that we'll have a good group there that will be open to the presentation. I'm not there to make people feel guilty or shame them. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to tell my story of an encounter with one of the greatest people I've ever met.
Thank you for coming here and sharing it.
Well, thank you, Meredith, for having me, and I'm really enjoying my time in Sitka.